Welcome to the Sugar Grove Online Events Podcast, Episode 6, recorded August 17th, 2010. Sugar Grove Village Board Meeting. This episode is brought to you by D&M Builders. Contact D&M today for new construction, additions, basements, remodeling, and carpentry repairs. Call 630-524-0020 or visit www.dnmbuilders.com.
Corridor study, discussion of the strategic planning goals status for long-term routine and complex, and discussion of accomplishments and action plans. Any comments on that? Okay. Okay. Welcome, Melissa. Hearing none, I'll close that portion. May I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Make the motion.
Rick,
second
by Trustee Jackson. Any request to remove an item? Any corrections for the minutes? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Trustee Montalto.
Aye.
Trustee Johnson.
Aye.
Trustee Rank.
Aye.
Trustee Bowler.
Aye.
Trustee Jerry.
Aye.
Trustee Taylor.
Aye.
Motion carries.
May I receive a motion to have a discussion on bike path community practice? I'll make that motion.
Second.
Trustee Johnson. Well, we have a few committee members in attendance. We have Mary here. Thank you very much for spearheading this group. We have John Clayton from the Park District and Ed Sweeney from Windsor Camp, Waterford Town Homes, and his wife. Thank you for coming. And then Mary Ashton Slater. So, again, we thank you all for putting in your time and effort. The board should have received this, and hopefully staff has it. Rick or Mike, do you guys have any preludes before we turn it over to Mary?
No, Mary.
All right. Why don't we step aside and give Mary the floor.
Well, thank you for having us all here this evening. I guess we had our first official kickoff meeting back in November of 2009, and we kind of quickly came away with our advisory committee having three goals for us. One is to kind of prioritize and put costs behind what we meant by the connectivity of what the plan would look like, to take another look at the bridge and recap the various grants that have been put forth in the past, and to kind of have a recommendation what that grant should look like. And I grouped two of the recommendations into one. But tonight was kind of not to take a step back from the bridge specifically, but what I quickly realize is that it's not so much a bridge as it is a plan that needs to be put in place for the village to bring the connectivity together. Over the years, we have the Virgil Gilman Trail, which is an 11-mile trail. 4 miles of it goes through the village. We've had, as developments come in, they put paths in place, but we don't have connectivity to those paths. So we plan in the long-term comprehensive plan, we talk about continuing side paths as we build roads, and as we build developments, to put bike paths in those developments, but we still lack bringing the village together. And so what we're talking about today is more of a short-term plan that talks about how to take what we currently have and make it an asset that everyone in the village can utilize. So, start.
Mary, you started this back in, was it November of last year?
Yeah, November. Well, it has probably been in my head for a lot longer than that. So one of the things that feels really good for me is to finally get something down on paper that other people can take a look at and work together to improve upon. So for many, and I'm probably going to use the word bike when I mean bike and pedestrian, just to shorten up the vernacular, but it is for biking and walking trail system. Bicycling is a very popular activity. It's a moderate form of exercise that most people can enjoy. A bike-friendly town is associated with a higher quality of life, a sense of community, as evidenced by the downtown areas in the Fox Valley. Bicycling can be a local asset. Ooh, and I've got it going fast. 52% of bike travel is for recreation and exercise, but 43% is destination-based, and that talks to complete streets. And much planning focuses on bicycling as an alternative transportation. 27% of all car trips are 1 mile or shorter, and 40% are less than two. This is something I spoke earlier about. We currently have a tremendous infrastructure in the village of Sugar Grove. We have the Virgil Gilman Trail, which bisects our community north to south. The Virgil Gilman connects up with the Big County Trail and the Fox River Trails, which run north and south through King County, and those connect to trails throughout the Chicagoland area. There's also currently 19.6 miles of additional pathways in Sugar Grove that doesn't include the Virgil Gilman. So surprisingly, that's what's come and that's what exists in our developments today.
I have referred to the Virgil Gilman as our central park in Sugar Grove because it's so long and affects one.
And you'll see as we go through this, I mean, something different might have played out, but that is a truism. And I think if you go down that, you know, if you start to visit other communities, Oswego has a trail called the Wabansee Trail System, and it's probably an 8 mile trail which connects through their community, but it connects everything, and it's a pedestrian, and everything connects into it because I think they realize it's a central hub. So the purpose of this plan is to provide a strategy for developing a network for bikeways and pedestrian pathways, and to outline ways to improve what we currently have through not only off-road trails but also bike-friendly roads. Bring connectivity, we've talked about, to hit popular destinations, improve safety, and encouraging bicycle use, and to prioritize and propose improvements for the existing bikeways, and then talk about funding. So one of the things I wanted to do is we use several different, to make a complete path system, we use several different types of forms of routing people. So I want to make sure we all think about it the same. There's the trails, which is like the Virgil Gilman Trail. It's physically separated from motor vehicle traffic.
Mary, what is the width of the Gilman Trail? Any idea?
10?
10 to 8.
So it started out as 8, and then it's 10, but there might be parts that are still 8. But that's pretty consistently 10 now,
right.
I believe.
Okay.
The side paths are something that we've focused on so far as we've developed additional roadways, and that's something that's separate and apart from a road, but it's alongside a road, but it's wider than a sidewalk and designated for bicycle jogging traffic. So that's one of ours in Sugar Grove today. Bike lanes is something that you don't see in Sugar Grove today. It's on a wider road surface, and there's it's lined and marked for bicycling. And we don't have any of those proposed, and we don't have any roads currently that are wide enough to have those. But it's something we might want to think about as we develop further, because there's some benefits to having bike lanes as opposed to side paths. One is maintenance. The other is a side path is great when you don't have a lot of ins and outs of intersections, but it's easier for traffic to understand what the bicyclist is going to do. So it's something that we might want to think about.
And Mary, and obviously bike lanes would be painted in areas where we would not allow parking.
Right. There's something coming up here. The bike routes is something that's you'll see throughout the plan, it's really a strong recommendation to bring connectivity. It's on safer roads, roads that don't get a lot of traffic use. You just mark the road that it's to share it for a bike lane or for bike traffic and to mark it. And the bike routes is what we will see throughout the plan quite a bit. And then there's what you were talking to, Tom, which is called shared biking park lanes. And that's actually wider because you've got parking and biking, and it's generally 7 feet on either side in addition to the driving. So that's actually a large thing. Also, we don't have any of these currently in our plan, but it's something that is used in other communities.
Where's that picture from?
That's Geneva. I think that's Mill Creek. Not Mill Creek. I'm sorry. The one with the golf course. Eagle Brook. Yes. So things that we thought about as we brought this plan together. We wanted to plan for the target audience, which is occasional casual adult cyclists. We need to think about the younger set, the children, and we also have the more advanced, but a lot of the more advanced cyclists are going to stick to the road and follow the rules of the road, whether or not we have provided them with side paths and such. We want to make sure that it's a continuous network, and we use both on-road and off-road improvements. Lower traffic, ample width, fewer turns, stop signs. As we got going along in the plan, you wouldn't believe the amount of site work we had to do, where you're sitting in a room and you're thinking about it, and before you know it, you got to get out and get on your bike and get out there and see what's really happening, because you can't know until you're there. So we did quite a few road trips, if you will. The spot improvements, the short links, where we have the most difficult roads or waterways to cross, we had to look for the bridge or the tunnels, and that's where the grant opportunities become very important. And then opportunistically, and we'll talk to this towards the end of the presentation, there's a lot of other taxing bodies and right within our community that are doing projects right now that if we were able to communicate this plan and everybody could see the benefits of this plan, we could probably get a lot of this work done as other projects are being done. So we talked about the 11.2 miles. It's a very important part. Right now, I don't know if it's easier to see on the map or not, but right now, the Virgil Gilman Trail, maybe it's actually easier to see on this. But right now we only have access to the Virgil Gilman Trail by foot or by bike on the north side of Blackberry Creek. And that's either at the Pressberry Spur or at Hannaford Woods. And there's no abilities safely to get onto the Virgil Gilman Trail from the south. And then from the north, we can't safely get to the community, the actual physical community of shops, retail, banks, safely. At this point. So the blue line, just to kind of orient everybody, cutting through is the Virgil Gilman Trail.
Do you have a lighter thing?
I'm going to see if I do.
I have one.
Okay, so here, this is the Virgil Gilman Trail right here. Right now, the two access points we have to it is you can park up here at Hannaford Woods off of Merrill Road, and you can come down the spur on the Virgil Gilman Trail safely, or you can park in Pressberry, and although it's a private parking area for Pressberry residents, but they never seem to mind too much, and cut in here and access this. From the south, there is no access points at this juncture. This is the trails in Bliss Woods today. This is Walnut Woods and their trail system. This is Settlers Ridge and their trail system. This is Ingham Park, so this is Gordon Road coming through here. Downtown, these are the side paths that are along Galena and Municipal. And this is the Windsor West trail system. And then this is Waterford and Windsor Point. And this is a gravel trail system. So that's how our system looks today. So this is from here to Galena, this parking spot here. This is 4 miles of Virgil Gilman. And then the other red and some of the sidewalks, this is the Hankus Road sidewalk that's used by a lot of bikers and other various sidewalks. This is the other 19 miles of trails that we have in the village. So I spent a lot of time just talking about how Blackberry Creek is an issue for us, but we also, and I think everybody's acknowledged over time, we have a lot of other major roads that intersect our village that we need to, that are a challenge to us. So not only do we, this plan gets us from the north of Blackberry Creek, which is the Presbury Spur and Hannaford Woods, those two are existing trails. South of Blackberry Creek, what we're proposing is that bridge, which is kind of halfway between Bliss and Route 56 to bring people north and south. And then also there is a, to bring people through Ingham Park from Settlers Ridge onto the trail in Aurora. Route 47, there's three cross points at Waubonsie Community College, at Bliss Road and Wheeler Road, intersection improvements and Cross Street. At Bliss Road, there's four cross points. The Windstone Lakes of Bliss Woods, we've suggested striping and signage there. Stratford Woods at Presbury and Windsor Road and Hankus, Virgil Gilman Trail, which currently exists, and the east side of Route 47 at Bliss. So those are all at-grade crossings. Route 56, the Virgil Gilman Trail, currently gets us across with their bridge, and Hankus Road Bridge, IDOT's currently come out and asked for input on their bridge improvements, and I think a great bridge improvement would be to have a bike pedestrian crossing there as well, because that would put us right across over to the Mid-County Trail quicker for a large part of the village. I just moved on and I didn't mean to, so but what was the other, did I miss something? I can go back. Okay, yeah, I got it. Gordon Road, there's one crossing at Parkside Drive, which is the south entrance of Settlers Ridge into Ingham Park. And Route 30, I think we are all aware that IDOT would like us to have a bridge over Route 30, and they don't want an at-grade crossing. So even though that might not be a short-term possibility, I think for now we can't improve it to be an at-grade crossing, but it's something that we need to be aware of that people use. So what does this plan get us? It basically connects all the neighborhoods in the village of Sugar Grove with the exception of three. It also connects us to most of the amenities services that are in the village of Sugar Grove, and it connects us regionally to others well beyond our current area. The three neighborhoods that remain unconnected in the short-term plan are Dugan Woods, Mallard Point, and Burling Oaks. And it was really hard given there's large amounts of undeveloped land in between these areas right now to come up with a plan to address it that monetarily, I think, is probably as much as anything accessible to us. So it's not there right now. And that's something that definitely needs to be considered as we develop between those areas and the heart of the village. So this is the plan that's developed, and it basically broke into three segments, and we've labeled the routes in the plan South Route, North Route, and West Route. And I'm going to kind of run you through each of these routes really quickly to kind of make sure we're all here. So this is, say, the Park District office. So you would come down and cross street. This would be on-street parking or on-street marking along here. It's one-way traffic going east is this way, and then coming back is this way. It's because if you get into the plan, you see that this road is already marked for no parking on the right-hand side, so it makes an easy, just put up some signage and put on lampposts and bring people down along the water treatment facility here. There's currently existing pathway here. And then this is a road that was put in when the water treatment facility was being built. It's just a gravel ag line pathway right now. It's a really nice bike trail. So I guess an easement would be required to use that. And again, there would be some pathway that would be required.
You said about 600 feet?
I'm not going to sit here with the details tonight, but within the plan, we've gone through and measured what's actually required for each of these improvements. It gets us into Settlers Ridge. You come along, go through Ingham Park. Again, this is Aurora right here. They have pathway systems. And Fox Valley Park District actually has had monies approved. They had a bond approved, and one of their improvements is to put a bridge over Galena here. So this will become a much safer crossing in the not too distant future. I think the final plan was, Dave, you might know this, in February 2010. I don't know when they're planning on starting work on that.
We're still working on the final plans. It'll be being constructed next year.
Okay. So it's within our sights. So this would be a connection point from the people from the south to get on the Virgil Gilman.
Mary, can I interrupt you?
Sure.
Did you consider taking Mallard Point down there and clicking it into that bike path right down there?
This is Prairie?
Yeah.
I would be open to ideas and possibilities, and that's one of the things that's, you know, the sharing is about. People might know things that the group that, you know, we need to share to get more information on how it could be done. I mean, I do know there's a tunnel there that's near the railroad tracks that you might be able to access under, and there's a block. But it's something worth thinking about. I know we've had, I'm open to it.
The railroad tracks are the major
impetus to the south. Right. So anyway, this is the South Loop again. I'm going to highlight real quick. This is the proposed bike bridge. So right now we have a bridge here going across Route 56, and we have a bridge in Bliss Woods that crosses the creek here, and here's Bliss Road. So this would kind of break through that central area there to bring people back south. And this is an ag line path behind Windsor Point, and then it comes out behind Waterford, and then there's a proposed side path that's to go in when this development on the corner of Route 47 and Bliss develops. And then we're talking about improvements at Route 47, Bliss, and Wheeler here. That would bring you across safely with cross signalization. And right up along EEI here, I'm hoping for an easement that could get us onto this Windsor West Trail. And I'm shaking. That's too much coffee. So this is the Windsor West Trail, and it connects down here to Galena. We're 10 or 20 feet shy of connecting here at Galena, and that puts us back on side pass all the way down to Route 30. There's trail system through here around John Shields and back by the pavilion. And this again is you could put the kids on the sidewalks as the parents rode the streets. It's a safe bastion. It's a nice road and marks up nicely. So that's the South Loop.
Mary, did you say that IDOT is probably not willing to give an at-grade crossing at Municipal Drive there?
That's my understanding.
Because of the width, road width, is that right?
Gonna,
yes.
And I guess we can talk about it, but that's one of the things, too, that I see why the conversations need to start earlier rather than late. I just read in the paper, North Aurora was planning to do what's called the Ruby Parkway, and it was basically to go to the Fox River Trail following down Oak Street, connecting into the Mid-County, and they're planning on crossing 31 there, right at Oak Street, and as an IDOT road, and IDOT came back and said, no, there will be no at-grade crossing there. And so the whole bike plan has been put on the back burner until they can address where they're going to cross 31. So the fact that we need to work with IDOT at Route 47, it's better to have those conversations sooner rather than later. I think KDOT's more amenable to this, and you can see by their, when you look at Orchard, and the kind of improvements they've made on Orchard for Mid-County Trail, there's quite a few at-grade crossings at lights with signalization, and it works quite nice for the bikers. It slows you down a bit, but you know you're crossing safely and you can cross with your children.
Would you have an estimate of approximately how long that south route was?
We're working on that.
Oh, okay. I
can tell it.
It's about one 2 hours.
Of the things.
2 hours? Yeah. Oh, okay. So about 10 miles.
I have run quite a few of these this summer just in my. I've kind of made a commitment that I do all my errands on bike now. Uh-huh. So, but I started at the middle school. So I do the south route and the west route together and then get back over to you when I'm on the north route. And it's about a 22-mile route system, but I purposely go wide. I'm going to go through each of these, but I just wanted to give you the one real quickly. We've named them, we've color-coded them in the bike plan, and what you see is there's a hub that gets created that basically consists of that central area where the bridge would be, the trails through the Bliss Woods Preserve, and the Windsor Point Waterford Trails, and those, that section of trail, let me go back, which is right there, becomes the central zone for all three of the trails, which kind of loops into it, so you can do all of them. And that requires three improvements. The improvements at Route 47 and Bliss that we're talking about, the improvements, this bridge again over Blackberry Creek, and the side path that would connect this to the Waterford area. So I just described the south route to you. These are some pictures of the south route. So people who haven't been out in the trail system can kind of visualize what I'm talking about and what currently exists. So this would be the kind of on-street path. We could put some signs up marking the north route and which way to go on the current existing street posts. And it's already marked for no parking on this side, so it makes it nice and easy. When you get down to the water treatment facility, the side path already exists. We do need to grade an area to connect to that Ag Line Trail right behind it. This is that actual Ag Line Trail that people don't know about that's currently out there, and it's a nice ride. And then that would connect into what's at Settlers Ridge right now, which is paved side paths and trail system through Settlers Ridge. This would be the crossing at Gordon and Settlers Ridge, right into Ingham Park on the south side. And this is approximately where the bridge crossing is proposed over Blackberry Creek. So over to this side is the Virgil Gilman, and this is the trail that currently exists in Windsor Point, the Ag Line Trail. And you would come out here near Waterford Place and cross to the side path that currently doesn't exist to this crazy intersection. But this is also the trail system, and then you would continue over on the Windsor West Path system, which is it's a really nice trail, but right now it goes nowhere and serves no one other than local Windsor Point residents. But it doesn't actually get them outside their subdivision. The north route, I'm going to skip this and go back and just talk through it. The north route, actually, I'm going to start here at the Pressbury Spur, the Pressbury Parking, using township roads, which would be, help me out here.
Hankus
Road, and then it's not Merrill New, it's Winthrop New,
okay,
to Buckingham. You could do on-street route to get over, and so it's just a matter of signage to connect Windsor,
Walnut
Woods, thank you, lots of W's here, Walnut Woods Trail System back to the Virgil Gilman Trail. There's two alternatives. Right now, through Pressbury, there's a footpath that's steep and it's a little bit low, that connects up to the water tower on the high end of Pressbury by the Girl Scouts facility. And you can take that trail down, if you're a mountain biker, to Buckingham. So with some improvements and some agreements that could be accomplished. Or this would be through the Carson Sloop property. And I know, I don't know what the fate of that will be, but that's something to consider.
We haven't been talking to the Forest Preserve about fire.
Right, I'm aware of that, but you know, it's nice to have the conversations.
Yeah. Until
something actually happens, we can't say anything. But the other way is to come back up here to Hankus Road to the sidewalk and then go in here at Merrill New. And I think we need to have the conversations with the HOAs to see if they would like to be marked for on-street and what their preferred routes would be. But we could bring, you know, there's various ways we could bring people throughout Black, this is Windstone and Black Walnut. And then this is the crossing over into Lakes of Bliss Woods. And again, this is just a matter of putting up street signs and marking the routes, bring them back here to Hannaford Woods. This is actually a footpath, and there's a side path going up the east side of Merrill here, or we could actually even bring it down and create shorter circuits for people, and then bring them back here onto the Virgil Gilman Trail. So that would be the north route. It's kind of two pieces right now until we work out how to connect these neighborhoods in a shorter way. So I have some pictures of those too. I'll go flip to that. So this, and these are nice wide township roads through Crestberry. Again, this is Winthrop New and Buckingham that we would propose marking. This is the crossing for Buckingham at Norris, and we have really nice side path trails over at Meadow Ridge Villas and Walnut Woods. And this would be something else to talk about the plan. I didn't talk about it here, but if we could connect Hankus Road and bring this up to the side path that comes down Norris, cross safely here, and if we had a south connecting or pedestrian crossing over 56 with that bridge improvement, it'd be pretty meaningful to the village.
So, how long is that? That's not that long.
It's marked in the plan. I just don't have it off the top of my head. And then the final one is the west route, and I'll go back and talk through it this way. It's faster. So the west route, if we were to start at, this is Wabansi Community College right here. It's the trailhead. Coming out through Wabansi property, having a safe at-grade crossing here with signalization at Wabansi Drive and Route 47. The side path would go up the west side of Route 47. We've got some development here that may be looking at putting a side path in. Right now, I think is it still Candy's Restaurant? I always think of it as Candy's. The old Harder Road actually cuts back behind here. So with a matter of maybe putting some side path in at the same time this development went in, we could use that, and about a 20-foot extension would get you on to Kalen's property and their service road. So you could bring people, even if there's not a side path here until they build out the high school, you could still use that service road and bring kids in and out safely if you get this signalization. There's existing trail at the, no, I'm going too fast, this is the school. There's existing trail at Kalen right now, and at this road, this is another service road that Kalen's putting in, Esker Drive. We could either mark that for a route, or if the side path, you know, we could get the side path in at the time. This is another thought process that's come up, which is this is the Wheeler Park, and there's some, this is the back property line for some of the farmers there. If we could get an easement, we could maybe even have it so there could be quick access between the school and the park, and maybe they could use each other's facilities. And then again, this is the Paterman property, so as that may develop out, the side paths could bring you back, and crossing here at Windsor West. There's some gaps here that might need to be addressed, but crossing here safely, there's a sidewalk that takes you back to this trail here. But you can also cross back on 47. This is next to the Village Bible Church, and there's a informal connection between the Village Bible Church and the Forest Reserve now that could be formalized, and get you back onto Virgil Gilman Trail System that way. So that's the West Loop. I have pictures of that too. And then I'll just think of that. I'm going to finish up. So this is the terminus of the Virgil Gilman Trail at Wabatsi. This is the intersection, Route 47, Wabatsi Drive, that we would look to improve on the north side for a north crossing right here. This would be the side path up Route 47, and then this is the harder road where you can connect into on the back side until that corner is eventually improved. And these are currently the path systems at the Kalen Harder Middle School, and it's continuing south now. I'm aware that they're grading and, put a side path, and at this point it's probably a day late, a dollar short, but maybe signage along that road in the interim.
No, we see a lot of traffic on Oscar Drive, so.
No, and it's the same with their service road on Harder right now. So one of the things we've also talked about in the system is that we need identifying logos. You want it to be brief, two-color, simple, and we came up with maybe alternating something like this, where you have north route, south route, west route, so identifying markers in addition to a map. Costs, trailer side paths run about $4,700,000 per mile, which, you know, obviously we don't get without development. It's not something that we're going to go out and build by ourselves. Bike lanes are $10,000 to $25,000 per mile, and that's basically primarily striping and signage again. Our bike lane doesn't propose any of those. So really what we're talking about is unstriped on-road routes, which is the signage and the identifying markers, and that runs about $3,000 to $5,000 per mile. And that's primarily what we need to get connectivity in the village today. Some ideas here about, you know, where the money's going to come from, but, you know, we know it's grants, we know it's impact fees, we know it's developers, and I think the other thing is just opportunistically looking when other people are doing things that we can do something at the same time, and it's more efficient and take advantage of that. So what we're looking for right now, I want to go through some of the opportunities I think that are out there right now for us to grab if we work together. But what you realize is we need to communicate. If we believe this is something that we want to proceed with, we need to communicate the idea and get buy-in from all the various tax bodies that have a vested interest in this and make sure that this is something that interests them too. So some of the current projects that are going on within the village right now that we could maybe take advantage of is KDOT's planning to improve Bliss Road at Hanker and Windsor. In the plan was looking for sidewalk extensions along Bliss, or along, can't think of my name, my road, Windsor and Hankus, and some signage and safe crossing there. And that could have, you know, if we talked to KDOT, is that a potential? I don't know where they sit in that project right now.
Are you looking for cross-hatching on Bliss? Windsor?
Yeah, it would be, there's the church property right there, and there's Stratford Woods Homeowners Association property there. But if we could extend that sidewalk, the Hankus Road sidewalk across, and bring bikes hashing not only across Bliss there, but across Stratford, and bring them on route through Stratford Woods, it would make a nice improvement to that area. Let's see. Again, we just talked about this one with them extending Esker Drive. Could we get a side path in? Maybe not, but maybe we don't even need one. I think, you know, just could we put signage up and have that be part of the bike plan until a future date when we can get that side path in? This is, if right now Prairieville Commons is looking to extend Division Drive to Galena, while they're down there, we need about 212 linear feet to connect that Windsor West path to Galena. Is that something? And it doesn't even have to be asphalt at this point. It just needs to be cut in so people can make the connection. which is right now it's an impossibility, but while we have crews there, is that something we could get in the bids? That's, you know, if they're in the air and they're bidding, they might just likely throw it in. This is, again, with this development here on the south, I guess the northwest corner, is it something we could look to talk to Wabasi? Is it something they'd be interested in getting people safely across the street to an establishment? And then this is just a conversation. IDOT's looking for input on that Angus Road Bridge right now. We should make it known that we would like to have a pedestrian bike-friendly crossing there as well. And that goes with their, you know, objective of complete streets. And so I guess the key recommendation is just to get maybe a resolution down the road that this is something that you support, input back, what you'd like to see different, or and get the word out there so we can talk to others. But how do we keep it going? How do we make it a plan of action as opposed to a plan on a shelf? And that would be a committee or somebody to have some time within the village to monitor if it's implemented. And then Mary, we talk with long-term vision.
And Mary, how's that Mid-County crossing in the again? Are they going over
They're going all the way over to Deer Pedro. Yes. Yeah. And that's basically, from what I understand, that's the hardest connection there is to make, and that's going to be the final one. So if you, they did a tremendous, I don't know if anyone's had a chance, but they just completed that Healy connection where they're almost connected up to Nelson Lake right now, and that's a beautiful path, and I had no idea that they had done so much of that. And the south portion is really awesome too, south 88. So they do have to go out to Deer Path Road to cross 88, but they are making great progress on that mid-county road, county path. So that's it in a nutshell. Questions or thoughts?
Mary, for the bridge, I don't know if there's right of way there where the inland piece is going to be opened inland. Galena going back over to Pressbury. Holt, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've contemplated this, but farmers out in rural areas basically take cement sewers, drop those into the creek, and then take an old rail car and throw it over the top of it. Creates a very nice, simple bridge. Which this being kind of a rustic area might blend well and serve its purpose for a number of years before you can find full funding for a regular bridge. I don't know the full engineering requirements for Blackberry Creek and what
runs
or is that like an issue? But if they provide a nice connection there and relatively inexpensive, I think it's like less than $10,000 to put something like that together.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you should say that, because I always think of, I look at all these farmer bridges and things that they've got going across creeks, and I'm like, well, that would be easy, and it's never as easy as you think it would be. So even, you know, I sit here and I probably said easy 50 times in my presentation. I know it's not easy. I know there's a lot of communication. I know that you need to bring a lot of parties together. I know there's always things about easements, and when you just think you got them all together, there's going to be one more thing that you need. But it's close, and it's attainable, and it's real, I guess, if we all want it to happen. And that's what it's about. So I guess the other thing, so this is in your plan, just to finish up. So there's the existing conditions map. There is... the map 2 basically goes through what improvements by number in the Vulcan Court, talks specifically to each improvement that's required for the north route, the south route, and the west route, and then this is what the major route map will look like in the end.
The only suggestion, that is a wonderful presentation, and a lot of hard work to get it done. One thing that I did see that we should consider the big picture is maintenance agreements for the portions of the trail, because I'm sure there are going to be, you know, different parties involved, and whether it's county or local or whatever, who's going to maintain cutback brush, and some of the things we might consider in specific spots that are wooded is maybe some kind of lighting plan too for security issues. And that more lighting, you know, early morning, late night type stuff, just to deter crime, and make it a little more accessible for the bystanders.
Yes, Melissa.
First off, it's nice to see you. I hope you're doing well. It's very strange to see you standing on the other side of this table, though. Number one, whoever designed the sign, love it. Absolutely love it. To the point where that leaf could turn into the arrow, to be perfectly honest. And then that would help the cross go from two signs down to one. So, yeah, love the sign cover. One thing, and I'm sure you already know it, but over on Healy Road where they just added that path from the north side to the south side, whatever that signage is that has that solar marking on the top of it to illuminate that sign at night, that is spectacular as well, and I have a feeling that would also work extremely well with the major roads that it's crossing. I'm sure it's expensive, but that sign...
That was $50,000.
That was $50,000.
Oh, yes. Well, see, it's all... what you do is when you come up on the bike path, there's detectors. That's what's right there at the crossing. The detectors catch the bike, and they set the lights up. And the lights will run for about 10 to 15 minutes.
Well, that's
to
good.
Give the motorist the advance warning that somebody's there, and then they're shut off.
Wow.
When nobody's there, so when they're flashing, that's to tell you to go caution.
I really was just thinking when it got dark, it flashed until it died later on.
No, it's set to go for 24 hours.
All right. All right, let me cross that off the list. One of the things I noticed when you have your ad hoc committee members that you don't have Prosperity in that in this mix.
We try.
And that's kind of, they're not at this time. And I'm kind of hoping that if we can sit down or mail it to them, because they'll open their mail, they can see the benefit to working with us. We really try.
Well,
I do know there's people in Prosperity that would love to be on the committee, but I don't have any of the executive board members.
Okay, well then we'll chalk that up on our to-do list to help conquer that. Did you, can that PowerPoint be emailed out to me?
Sure.
Has it been given to the Forest Preserve?
No, it's hot off the press.
Okay, so if you would like, I'd be more than happy to help get that to the Forest Preserve too.
I'm looking to make sure before we do that
we're
you all support
it. Here.
And I think from the Park District's perspective and the township perspective, I want to make sure that they're behind this completely, too. So I've got some quick work to do in that area.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess I should have said that I'm behind this completely.
Okay.
And it's brilliant. And I know when, as a mom of kids that are on that edge where they want to go on their own, like to go ride a bike, there's those panic sections. And I see you've addressed just about all the panic stuff.
Well, I was thinking about that today. The school district cut bus service, after-school bus service for sports and things. And I wouldn't hesitate to let my kids ride home from Cayman Harder Middle School to my house
however,
if they could get across Route 47.
Right.
And since they can't, I have to really work hard to work on some carpools.
Right. And then on top of that, even when they did have it, just my concern, as you know, it's yours as well, is that bridge on Bliss Road right there, the Blackberry Creek Bridge.
Yeah.
And being able to get that before.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So when you decide to open that door up, I'll be able to facilitate that in the county. And I love the lines on one side of the road, parking on the other. Where they had the bike path on one side and then they did parking on the other for the roads that were wide enough for that to do that. Then to me, it looked like that would be the least expensive.
Well, I think actually it maybe just a better picture. They were actually, it was set up so parking and bikes were sharing the road. So it was 7 feet wide and the bike could actually fit around the parking. If there's car parked, they could still make it through on either side of the road. So that's think if I remember right, it's 7 foot on either side for sharing parking and biking, and then 10 feet on either side for cars. So that's a 34-foot minimum.
So that's a big road.
It's a fairly large road.
Yeah, maybe parking on one side, biking on the other.
And we always have to think about, one of the things is, it's hard to take away parking if people have had it in the past, and you don't want to, so you have to try to work within the confines of what currently exists.
Sure. And one other thing, now this is a question. Do you know anything about, and I heard about this, I want to say yesterday, something about state legislation that came from Governor Quinn that he signed in about prioritizing bicyclists?
Yeah, I heard it.
I told you that yesterday.
It was about a month or so ago,
he signed the law that was to take effect, protecting bicycles from motorists, and you have to give them more room.
That was very recent, and Ed Barsotti was one of the, and the Illinois League of Bicyclists was behind that. But I think what that basically says is that that's for existing roads, and that's for, I would say, more advanced bicyclists. But if they're on current roads, you have to move at least 3 foot wide of them, and they should be out 3 foot deep from the road. So it's that concerns bicycle safety for all.
Is that active now? Do we know? Or was it?
Did he sign it, or goes into effect? Yeah, I think on the effect
right now. There are some cars.
People to realize that in the short-term plan, there are some inconsistencies with the long-term plan. Well, there's only one that I can think of, but the long-term plan had planned for a crossing at Park at Route 47. This plan doesn't actually do that because there's left turn lanes on Route 47. There's no signalization there right now. The side paths and the bike paths don't necessarily connect up with the sidewalks, and so that's going to be a major investment. The lights that need to come in there before that would ever really be considered a safe crossing for Route 47. So this Route 47 improvement, or improved signalization of Route 47 and Bliss and Wheeler, could, you know, I see that being a good short-term and long-term possibility. IDOT may say something different, and I would move. something else I don't want to fight, so.
If we get a national chain come in and we get warrants at Park and 47.
It's not necessarily the right place long term. Right now, short term, 47 makes a lot more sense.
Will you be presenting this to the Park District soon?
I can.
I think the more we can get it out there, the better. And then, why don't we take some time and get some feedback back to Mike here. Mike, since he's on the committee, he needs a house, and then, if there's no objections, then we can pass a resolution supporting it.
Okay, great.
I think we all realize it's probably a work in process, and as new developments come in, we can work to...
Yeah, and I guess that's something I've struggled with from a, you have a plan, and think it's the plan, and I think what we need to realize is that we need to be flexible. There's going to be opportunities that are going to shift, how things might happen, and we want this to be flexible enough to capture those opportunities, but see that the larger opportunity here is to connect the village through pedestrian and bike connectivity.
Well, thank you very much. Any other questions?
In addition to your presentation at the Park District, do you plan to send copies of this at least to all the different homeowners associations?
Right now, I feel like we're in a loosely knit group of people here, a little bit like a rebel without a cause. I really wish I had some backing to know that others support this too, because I would love to take this to the school district and Forest Preserve District and KDOT and share with them and Wabansi and see if this is something that they could be thinking about. How do we get people and how do we address complete streets and why do we just have to be a vehicular society?
Well, without
should go bike committee.
I think getting the plan out there and more sets of eyes to see it while it's in the development stage, because oftentimes people who aren't that close to it can look at it and say, oh, but what if you went this way? And that might make, after you've concentrated on something so long.
That goes back to wanting the flexibility within the plan to capture changes and bring those forth, but having something that people can embrace, the spirit of it. I mean, there's been hours and hours of work that have gone into this. We've been educated. We went to bike planning, a 101 class with the Illinois League of Bicyclists, and have brought this far, which is way further than I was anticipating going.
Mary, what do you feel is needed for this to have teeth?
A resolution, and I think, maybe it comes at this, I don't know if it's a joint resolution where, between the park district, maybe the township and the village saying this is something that we embrace, and maybe that's where we go. I guess I'm looking for advice and guidance as to what
you think. Start somewhere, this is your start, I suppose,
Mary, one of the other things I guess I would suggest, instead of trying to meet with just dozens of organizations, maybe the inverse would be more correct, and just host an opportunity to come out and give, see the presentation, and then allow people to give input, so then you're not spinning your wheels going out to all these organizations.
Right, and I wasn't implying that you should go give an individual presentation. I just meant at least send them the booklet and say, in your regular meetings, you guys take a look at this plan. We're in the development stage. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Right.
Type of,
I kind of like a combination of that, which is
like
the book and say we're going to have a meeting to discuss it and see if you have interest.
I think that's a
good one. Sean, even a variation of our governmental bodies meetings that we held once or twice a year, in which we focus a little bit more, but still bring in. It wouldn't include the Big Rocks and things like that, but we would bring in all the entities, including the school district, the township, and so on. And one solid presentation with various groups like us that have already seen it, endorsing the concepts and the principles, would go a long way to getting all involved.
Well,
and Pressbury might even come in.
Yeah. Well, typically we have all municipal meetings or governmental meetings. Maybe that's not there.
Okay. Even the neighboring municipalities and villages, we get together quarterly with Drew King County, and we'll sit and listen to what they've got going on with their grants and their bike plans, and we look at those to see, as they're building out and as we abut each other, how can we tie in our bike plan system to what their bike plan system is. So it's not that we're not communicating. There is that avenue of communication. But I think it's at a higher level that we need to buy in and support.
Well, it probably goes back 5 or 6 years ago that King County didn't realize we had a bike trail system, and that we had worked with Kimball Hill and Sellers Ridge, I think, to put in an extensive bike route. So, it's good to have that communication. Oh, okay. Anything else?
We'll
look at this and get some comments and then pass. Yeah. Did any other committee members have anything to say, Mary or Ed? No? Thank you all. Appreciate that. Appreciate all the time. All right. Now we'll go to the Route 47. Which talks about bike trails, right?
Yes, it does.
You guys can stay or leave. It's up to you. Okay, so we'll work on that. And then motion to discuss Route 47 corridor study.
Make that motion.
Second.
Okay.
For discussion purposes only?
Yes, sir.
Are we done with the LCD?
Yes.
We should probably kill that light that we're burning the bulb.
I can kill it quicker than I can get it to start.
Just say no.
Thanks to Dennis for listening. We appreciate it.
We appreciate you listening.
Oh, yeah.
The Route 47 corridor study is an effort that's been going on for about a year and a half. It was started with McHenry County, Woodstock, and Kane County going in for a Illinois Tomorrow Corridor grant. And IDOT awarded one single grant instead of three separate grants so that there could be a coordinated effort on the study of Route 47. So within this corridor that goes from the Wisconsin border all the way down to just south of us here at Kane-Kendall Line, there are 15 different communities, the two counties that I referenced, and IDOT has been involved, CMAP has been involved, the RTA has been involved, and a consulting firm, actually two consulting firms were hired to put together a major study that we have complete draft copies if you'd like that. I know there's been one that's sat out in the cubicle as you come into the building for a while. But I tried to take and highlight what I felt were the important aspects of the overall study and what the principles of smart growth, which are just being passed out, that are pretty standardized, that have come from Kane County for a number of years, that are referenced in a lot of documents, including Kane County planning documents, CMAP documents, and what have you. The basic idea, the basic principle is to keep traffic moving, obviously, to coordinate local, regional, and state decision making, to improve economic development, to improve nodes that promote transit and walking, and that goes along with Mary's plan in terms of her committee's plan in terms of the overall pedestrian and bike trail system, to protect natural areas, to promote placemaking, which I'll talk about in a minute, and to strengthen existing developed areas. The county and, well, the two counties and the consulting firms have gone through and really evaluated many different aspects of how the corridor functions, how municipalities interact with one another, the overlapping responsibilities for improvements, and also the approval of different developments, and look at those smart growth principles. But primarily what it boils down to in my mind is a review of two things. It's local land use control and local land use decision making, and also how that interacts with IDOT and the state's approval of improvements in the corridor itself. They've looked at it and they've categorized that there's three different types of communities that run along this corridor. One would be categorized as a regional center, and that's what we're categorized as, because basically Route 47 is the backbone to our community. It's the our economic engine, if you will, because of the possibilities and the existing retail developments and office space that align the corridor. The other two are called historic, and that would be more of an Elbert type situation where you actually have historic structures that are abutting the corridor, or some of the other communities, the smaller communities that are up in McHenry County. And then the third category would be edge communities, which don't have as much impact, but are impacted by what happens on 47. Communities such as Montgomery would be an example of that. IDOT's design standards are ultimately the rule on how things are developed, as we all know. We all experienced, you know, for a number of years going through Dave and Tony, going through the design challenges that they had to get something approved through IDOT with Municipal Drive and Galena. So we know that that's the real hammer, if you will, in terms of the design criteria and how that plays out. What I highlighted for you was the review of what the consultants came up with in doing the study of 20 different planning challenges. We can take a minute to talk about those. Hopefully you have those in your email packet. What this talks about is a number of different factors, including economic development, design, land use, and again, how both CMAP and the county plan for the future. So as an overview,
one of the most important factors that I think hit me, and Brent and I talked about this a little bit, is that CMAP is projecting that in their 2030 forecast, the ratio of jobs as they exist today to the population will be less along the corridor. So when you think about that for a minute, what does that really mean? And that means, at least I think, for the regional centers, which we're one, we have to look at all the tools that we can muster up and try to help generate all kinds of interest in programs that would be sales tax rebates, anything that's going to produce jobs if we really truly want Route 47 to be the economic engine of the community. That may be our desire, it may not be, but you have to look at the toolbox that they provide, and I'll talk about that again in a minute. But they provide a listing for all of these 20 challenges and what they call the toolbox of implementation that could be accomplished. And as we get through this, you'll see that we've done some of those things, which is good. The second element is what type of community. I've already covered that. And it means for us that we have to take a leadership role in this sector of the county in terms of how 47 is ultimately designed and developed. We've done a lot of that already, because when you look at the corridor itself, and when you think about it all the way from McHenry County and the Wisconsin line down to 30 and Montgomery, we are really the exception. Us in Woodstock and maybe a small portion of Huntley are the exception in terms of what the existing facility looks like, because we have the four-lane cross-section. We have the six-lane cross-section and key intersection. Most of it is really rural in nature, and it's a rural cross-section of a two-lane road with ditches and underdeveloped, or not, I shouldn't say underdeveloped, but undeveloped property that goes through or cuts on the edge of communities. So we are a little bit of an exception, and we are a regional engine that can drive what happens in this part of the county.
Did you get to see what Huntley's plans are for 47? They're in the process of widening.
They're similar to some of the things that we've already done with Galena and 47. They have a little bit more commercial activity than we do. They obviously are much further along in terms of their linkage of 47 with 90 and the redesign of that intersection than we are with 47 and 88, but it's very similar.
The old downtown where the railroad tracks are, they have so many curb cuts that, you know, that's got to hold.
They have some significant design changes. I mean, their downtown is a little bit offset by 47, but very close to it. Uh-huh. And like you're saying, with the railroad tracks and some industrial buildings and older commercial buildings that are very close to the right-of-way, they have a number of design challenges that they're going to have to overcome. Mm-hmm. They have sectors north of town that are similar to ours that are newer developments that they've taken into the plan or the approval of those developments. The ultimate right-of-way should be what the appropriate setback should be, and so on. But they choke down right there by the railroad tracks and Main Street.
They aren't trying to go over those railroad tracks, are they?
Not that I'm aware of.
They are in the process of that.
I've gone through there and it's a mess. Yeah. But I couldn't figure out if they were trying to go higher.
I don't think
they raised. But then by Del Webb, they've opened it up to a six-lane cross section. Right. So that's right. Quite hard.
So the third planning challenge is looking at density, walkability, and an active lifestyle. And one of the things that we're going to talk about a little bit, as well as Mary referenced in her presentation about complete streets. Complete streets is kind of a national term, a national planning term, that's been identified, meaning that you look at all users. You don't just focus on the car or the truck, vehicular traffic. You look at all users, how that incorporates with pedestrian traffic, how that incorporates with bikers, how you look at other transportation modes. And there's a term that's used in the study called multimodal, which is just exactly what it sounds like. It talks about all transportation modes, meaning bus routes, if you're lucky enough to have a train station, all those interactions that create the overall service level that multiple forms of transportation need. So in the third point, it's talking about compact and mixed use, which, you know, to some degree we have promoted compact and mixed use. maybe not to the extent that the plan anticipates, and definitely not to the density that the plan anticipates, because they're talking about densities in the 7 to 15 units per acre, and we haven't seen that type of development proposal in our community. But that's what they're suggesting it takes to create an active living lifestyle, which means more activity, more walkers, more bikers, people that are using alternative modes of transportation other than getting in the car, like Mary was talking about, you know, doing her errands to the middle school or to the bank or what have you.
Thanks for all the plugs.
What's that?
Thanks for all the plugs.
Well, it does. Seriously, it does mesh together.
We're just impressed you do your errands on a bike, too. But you're making us really lazy.
The fourth point talks about the use of PUDs, and as we all know, our zoning map is pretty much PUDs throughout. It's not that that's a bad thing necessarily, but the study points out that if there's an overabundance use of PUDs in a community, then the zoning ordinance needs to be reviewed and possibly updated, which we've talked about in recent months, and Mike and I are working on text amendments that are actually going to the Planning Commission soon. So that very much, you know, dovetails into what the study is talking about in terms of how we should approach active living again and walkability. The fifth is we need to, and the study is saying not we, but they talk in general about strengthening the efforts to encourage compact and mixed-use developments, either through identifying growth nodes, identifying where residential densities could be higher, identifying locations where you can increase building heights, identifying areas where you can increase FARs, floor area ratios, reducing parking requirements when possible, and reducing setbacks when possible. So to some degree, that conflicts a little bit with our Route 47 corridor study that was done a number of years ago, specifically in terms of setbacks, but it does mesh well with talking about mixed use and hopefully reducing some of the requirements that go along with parking spaces and what have. So kind of a yin and yang on that in terms of what we have in place with the village. Looking for the unique character, and this is, keep in mind, when I'm talking about these things, they're talking about the entire corridor, not just Sugar Grove. But looking for unique character and areas that are provided along 47, the architectural feel of the historic districts, the agricultural sections such as we have in some of the planning area along 47, and then talking about placemaking, which means that we promote or identify differently, hopefully, individual communities or groups of communities with a theme. And I can't think exactly what that means other than the study anticipates trying to have something different than Randall Road, where you go from Crystal Lake down to, you know, North Aurora, and essentially it's the same. You know, every 5 miles there's a Target. You know, every 10 miles there's a Menard. You know, that type of thing. So, seriously thinking about identifying what those place making elements would be if there are those in our community.
Just thinking, I remember spent a lot of time with planning resources when we did our Route 47 corridor study. Kevin, you were there, right? In time? So, mm-hmm. You know, 4 or 5 of us. Cindy was here. I don't know. Brent, no. But we spent a lot of time going through slides, and one that just sticks out in my mind is the clover leaves at 30 and 47, and how, you know, they suggested that we do the natural plantings and that we do some type of limestone or something like that to create that sense of place, because it really is not usable and functional, but it's a node that is very visible and that people could
and make
see
it
that.
Welcoming.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
and that is something that, other than Huntley and ourselves and the corridor, we're the unique ones because we have those clover. So how do we accent those or augment what's already out there to make it a sense of place?
Yeah. So I'm working with the guy that did the plannings on 47 to see if he can get us some hybrid sycamore trees, because apparently the Arboretum came out with some new sycamore trees that aren't susceptible to something. So
I'd thrown those out there. Any freebies we can.
Each one of these points that I'm going through has individual, what they call, I don't want to overuse the term, but they have individual toolbox items that are suggestions that we can go into further in subsequent meetings, but they outline, you know, how they feel communities should approach these challenges if they want to approach them. So the seventh one was, how do county and municipal plans differ? Really, ours mesh pretty well with what the county's 2020 and 2040 plan were, and that's essentially where we have commercial activity nodes identified in our land use plan. They had commercial identified in those same areas. Where we have forest preserves that have already been established, obviously, and there might be some addition or some adjustments in those lines with the acquisition of additional properties, but they're essentially the same as what our land use plan is, because we know that they're already there, and you know, the forest preserve isn't going anywhere. So we're bordered by quite a few forest preserves, as you're well aware. So that coordination, the overall study continually talks about local municipal support of regional planning efforts. So it's kind of an underlying theme to the whole thing, but we mesh pretty well with that in terms of our land use plan and what the county's land use plan is. Along that same line, the study talks about minimizing land use impacts and trying to minimize congestion as much as possible. Should be self-evident. The eighth point was for the corridor to be obviously recognized as planned to be highly developed in the next 20 years. And what does that mean in terms of wastewater and the FTAs that are along the corridor? Looking at smaller communities that aren't tied into a Fox Metro system, this is a bigger challenge, but I think that we're in pretty good shape because of our relationship or our connection with Fox Metro. We know that the capacity is there. The trunk lines to get to some of our areas we know are a challenge, but the capacity is planned for by Fox Metro in their system. So hopefully once development starts back up again and there's the ability to do some of these major trunk sewers or transmission lines, that will mesh in with our comp plan. But as an overall study, they're talking about how waste treatment facilities need to keep up with the FPAs, because there isn't the capacity that's planned in many of these smaller towns to deal with what the anticipated growth would be. Protecting open space and natural areas is the ninth point. That includes agricultural preservation and open space preservation, and that this can provide an economic development benefit because it does make for a different classification or feel to a community than, like, you know, keep using Randall Road as an example. But everybody at the county now uses Randall Road as an example of how things shouldn't be. So how do we do things differently than what was coordinated on those efforts? The 10th is to protect floodplain and floodplain protection and wetland mitigation. This goes along with the idea of stormwater management, best management practices, and as you know, we follow the King County Stormwater Management Program. So that's in our code as we speak today. 11th would be forest preserve district protection in natural areas. It's kind of overlapping, trying to avoid any conflicts with municipal planning efforts and the land acquisition efforts of the forest preserve. The 12th point was protection of groundwater. As Pete from EI has presented to the board in recent months, major regional efforts to over time look at what the protection of groundwater means. The aquifers that are really supplied from many different areas, but primarily, as I understand, from the west and in DeKalb County. It takes, I read, thousands of years for that rainwater that's collected in DeKalb County to get into the deep water aquifers that are, you know, part of our system. But recharge looking at local recharge areas and how those areas are protected are very important, and that's all part of what the county's promoting in terms of overall stormwater management, but also groundwater management. The 13th point was looking at the needs of the right-of-way. This, again, specifically identifies where IDOT's involved, and specifically as a strategic regional arterial, or SRA route, which Route 47 is, and how we have those cross-sections that deal with the 4 or 6 lane cross-section improvements that municipalities have put in. Goes back to the point I was talking about in terms of we're in pretty good shape in terms of the right-of-way, especially north of 30 along what would be in our land use plan for the 47. There's a little bit of a challenge as you go south of 3056 and you get to the west side and you look at in front of Fireside or some of the adjacent development or adjacent buildings that are south of there, and specifically once you get south across, simply because of the steep slope that's on the west side, there probably have to be an offset of the center line with major improvements as we look at the railroad crossing and the underpass in years to come, that right of way to accommodate everything that needs to be incorporated in that design would take more property potentially from the east side of 47 simply because of the terrain on the west.
Has the state commented, are they going to redefine what an SRA is and how SRA should develop themselves?
Not that I'm aware of. No.
Dave,
do you have any?
No. Was it in the 90s when they did that?
Yeah.
SRA, and it's pretty much like up by Wabon's words, four-lane divided highway.
Right.
Yeah. So will they continue that, or then I guess when you get into population centers, then they narrow it down?
Well, there isn't one set design. I mean, when you have the room like you have in front of Wabonzi, then you deal with hopefully having a median. But as we talked about earlier, when you have Huntley and you have the real cost of trying to acquire several buildings to lie down and maybe put in a smaller median, you know, how do you offset the economics of it to accomplish what hopefully is the same design capacity?
And they do have a rural and urban section.
Oh, good.
Yes. Guidelines for that SRA. Currently, everything through Sugar Grove is considered a rural section, even though what we did at Galena in 47, they looked at that in terms of an urban section, or the official designation of a rural section.
The 14th point looks at land use growth. It's evident that when times were good in terms of development, that development transportation facilities couldn't keep up with development. So as we plan for the future, how do we try to bridge that gap? It boils down to funding, really. And that means state and federal funding that can't keep pace, or couldn't keep pace with the demands of growth. And there's no magic answer to that, but it's just more of an observation than anything else. What they suggest in the study is that municipalities should consider proactive measures to mitigate traffic. What that means, in a sense, is trying to look at compact development and look at mixed use and look at changing our FAR ratios so that people may have the opportunity to do the errands on a bike or walk to the store or go to the bank.
Yeah, so, and I think our municipal drive being, you know, a local arterial, if you will, that local people can use it to get north and south, and Gordon in the future, so they can get north and south on the east side. So our residents and other local residents won't have to go out Route 47 to just 47. I think using Randall Road, you know, Deer Path Road does not go completely north-south, so people all have to funnel out to Randall Road to make a north-south trip. And if you can help out the locals by avoiding that, then you take off some of the congestion.
Well, in addition to that, with division and capital,
yeah,
you know, where you have a frontage, in addition to that other north-south.
Right? Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, that's one of the things that they point out as well in the study, is that having a grid network, if you will, of parallel roads to 47, and we have, you know, the start of that. When we take a look at it. You look at what capital does in that sector just north of Galena. You look at what we've accomplished on Division, and with hopefully the connection of the Division dead ends now and making that connection to Galena, and then taking all the way with, you know, the pass system and hooking up to municipal. We're doing the same things that they're talking about in terms of providing parallel roads, but also a network when you look at our east-west connections as well. So that's where then crossings become important, like Cross, like 47, like Bliss, like Wabanzi. All of those become very important to the overall network as properties fill in, or as developments fill in the vacant areas. 15 was most communities they found on the study route lacked potential bus transit opportunities. I know that at one point we had a bus service line that I believe went to Wabanzi, is that correct, in years past? Ridership was pretty low. What that really boils down to is that it's too easy to get in a car and do things today, whether because gas isn't $4 or $5 a gallon, or just because of the sheer convenience, or because of the effort of trying to do carpools or find where there's a bus stop. It's a matter of convenience is what I think it boils down to. But that doesn't mean that we don't plan for the future in terms of how bus travel. One of the things we're going to do is actually meet with Pace soon. We've talked to them briefly at some of the workshops, but how that can be incorporated, and as Sean, you and I have talked about many times in terms of having a park and ride that eventually becomes a train station, you know, that's the basis for the start of hopefully bus routes. Brent and I went down and talked to Metro last December. That was one of the things that they said, well, have you talked to Pace? Because, again, to get that progression from a park and ride to a train station, obviously Pace has to be involved in it. So they have to be, you know, part of the equation as well. Number 16 was the lack of, and again, this is in general along the entire corridor, not just for Sugar Grove, but the lack of bike and walking paths and plans for them by communities. So that ties in directly with what Mary and her committee are doing. So that's, you know, a lifestyle change that needs to be incorporated into the comprehensive plan for many communities, not just in addition to our comp plan. Try to wrap it up here. Design without regards for pedestrian and bike paths that was identified. Lack of transit needs, which we've already talked about. We need to have a balance to incorporate protected areas, but at the same time have the potential of users that can cross those areas. Design guidelines that need to be changed and incorporated into both subdivision standards, zoning ordinance, and in some cases because of FAR or setbacks, even the building code. We've talked about the grid system, encourage walkability. We've already talked about density. Some of these are really overlapped, so I apologize. But again, the overall undertone to the whole thing is about regional coordination, which to me means the county, and frankly, there's going to be municipalities that are going to resist that land use control being dictated by the county. I think, like I said earlier, we mesh pretty well in terms of our land use plan with what the county shows for our area as an overall plan. They definitely, as you all know, they promote the idea of transit-oriented design and mixed-use design where you have more compact designs and preservation of greater amount of open space, which, you know, this board and the Plan Commission have shown a desire to do in the past, so I don't think that there's any reason to think that we couldn't continue to do that. What was also included was a lengthy section called Section 8, which was the toolbox, which at another time I'd like to go through some of those ideas, maybe get some feedback from you on what's been presented tonight, what you might feel is a good thing or a bad thing in terms of how we incorporate this into our text amendments for the zoning ordinance that we'll be moving forward. So that's what I have.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions for Tom? I remember one night you were thumbing through this and you found some transportation numbers, trip numbers that showed sugar growth was pretty high.
A lot higher than we thought, at least I thought they were. Yeah, I'd have to look to see them again, but.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Well, the biggest number is the 20,000 daily trips on 47 north of 30. It's not quite that high south, but north of it definitely is. And as we know from our economic development efforts, that's a threshold that many retailers look at as 20,000. In past years when we said, you know, it was 17 or 16, people didn't pay attention, but you can see them light up a little bit when they say, when you say 20,000. So that's an important number.
Yeah, I think going back to when we did our, what we call our Raw 47 corridor study, and we came up with setbacks and which way the buildings would face and some of the landscape, I think it was good at the time with anything we could do to refine it.
We're going to address those in the months to come as we look at trying to implement. I didn't really highlight on all of the things that we've done that are included in the study, but there's several things that we have incorporated through the years. I mean, we're talking about 10 years, different things that have gone on that are highlighted as elements that can be incorporated to blend into this type of planning document. So,
certainly from all my travels throughout the United States, I think of Fort Lauderdale where they have that pedestrian path for bicycles and rollerbladers, so on and so forth. This really kind of excites me. For all the years that I kept on saying, is there a way that we can incorporate this, that we are now starting to plan at that level and take a look at some of these features that could ultimately give us a world-class type community. So I find this rather exciting.
Well, as we've always talked about, we have a lot of challenges in terms of just how 47 is an asset, but at times it's a detriment too, 47 and 5630. They're great for vehicular traffic, but they create quadrants in the village that, bridging, not that they have a pun on word, but bridging those areas or those quadrants by bike paths or roadways or, whatever you can do in terms of, we talked about, a transportation fund that would go to specifically bridges. The first and foremost in my mind would be Municipal Drive. So you look at that in terms of how you cross those barriers. And unfortunately, we have several of those that, like I said, they're both an asset but a detriment.
Yeah. And I can see Sugar Grove being known as the community of bridges with all the obstacles we need bridges, with creeks, roads. Yeah, so that's there's a lot of those. But you got to address them.
25 years ago, people wanted to have neighborhoods that had many cul-de-sacs and exclusive neighborhoods, and it's come full circle from that to, at least in a planning vernacular, you want to have those cross-access, you want to have the network of roads and interconnecting streets so that you have options.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only other thing I think we really need to be looking at the future, more near future than anything else, is our technology, communications, infrastructure, because it really stinks there in Sherbrooke.
Also,
I think, first of all, residential use. We have mobile offices that rely on communication technologies that are, I think, lacking far behind what other communities have. And so I think we need to be pursuing that in the near future. Just so. First of all, you can grow, and you can get more technology-oriented companies looking at Sugar Grove, because right now the infrastructure doesn't exist.
We had a meeting with a company out in the Carroll Industrial Park there. Actually, it sounds like AT&T is running high-speed internet out to fiber optic cable.
At Arrow Park?
Yeah.
Can they bring it down
to the road? It was already there, and then we found out we might go.
It doesn't exist. The only thing is that it doesn't exist, but it ends at Bliss Road.
Yeah, it's not a complete network.
No, and that's something that we really need to be looking at.
And how do we make, you know, someone like that sit up and take notice of what we need here when, you know, they say, well, things are too spread out or it's costing per mile. Everybody.
I won't get Ken on it because I'm talking for an hour. You know exactly what I'm saying.
Sean, that statistic was on page 29, and it pointed out, as I think Dave said, I'm not sure, about the traffic, or no, I guess it was Richard, the traffic volumes being just south of Sugar Grove, 20,800 and 20,900 a day. The only other place that's even close is in Crystal Lake. And we exceed even the Huntley area, like 8,000 cars a day. Now, I find that shocking, but you know that's the reason we got all those little squares out on the highway right now, too, isn't it?
Yep.
It's on page 29.
When I see those little squares, I try to drive extra.
Only that.
That's, is there any follow-ups to what the county's doing? I know they just closed the comment period on this. Was it this plan?
It's their own transportation plan document. That's a separate document to this. They overlap a little bit, but Tony and I have both provided comments to the county.
They did? Okay. That's important.
Well, all right. So you and Mike are working on. Yeah, we want to come back and explore some of these toolbox ideas further when we look at text amendments to the zoning ordinance. I think that that'll dovetail nicely with the study. So.
And, you know, we spent some time when we did extend Municipal Drive in Galena to think about setbacks and, you know, working with Inland at the time as to how we have some orientation, curb cuts, things like that, get people out across 37. So hopefully we can build on that or use that as an example of what we need to do different for the future. If they come back and want to amend it, we could use, but that would probably be the biggest area that needs to be developed.
Okay. The other thing is that Tony and I will be at some point coming back for potentially a resolution endorsing the county's transportation plan, so that'll be coming back to you as well.
Okay. Tell us you're going to approve less than 47. But, you know, the county's really come a long ways in the fact that they're working on Bliss Road now and taking a lead and sort of at least planning for how things are going to be developed. Gives us the opportunity to comment now before it's too late and they have everything figured out. So I guess communication, as Mary pointed out earlier, is important. Okay, well, thank you. All right, strategic planning goals. Spend enough time on pass on that for tonight. We'll go on to. Well, we pass on a strategic plan, like your goal.
I was just going to suggest that.
We've spent a lot of time on that, yeah. And, why don't we take a 10-minute break and then reconvene and then we'll go over some of these accomplishments and action plans. Okay, we can reconvene. It's chilly. Give me a beer.
It's nice and refreshing to have. Tell you what, with all this humidity.
Have a refreshing beer?
It would probably be refreshing to have a cooler air.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Open up the windows.
Well, that would work too.
Waiting for when they had these meetings, did they have just about everybody there?
A number of all of them. There were individual community visits by their consulting team, and Kane County came to ours, obviously. So we had some staff members and Dave involved in our review.
Everybody accepted pretty much, or?
Not across the board, you know. And then there's been at least two group workshops of all the communities in the county held up in Huntley. And, you know, like half-day sessions, going through different elements. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got to be a feat just to get everybody there and get the counts.
Well, everybody has their own ideas, you know, and everybody has their own plans for their community. So how, yeah, they talk about how that's, you know, one of the detriments to the plan itself, to the study, is that everybody has their own agenda.
Well, and how do you get, you know, that many different communities all on the same page when, you know, the big thing is what's in it for me?
Yeah. Traveling up and down 47, at least from here to Woodstock and sometimes up to Hebron over the last 4 years, there's been some change, but not as significant a change as you would think over 4 years. You know, Elbert's got a little more commercial on the north end, but Huntley, say, has Del Webb, and then really there's not a lot in between. Even Stark's Corners, you know, it widened it a little bit.
Yeah.
And a nicer gas station.
Yeah, exactly. A nicer gas station.
And Ingrid drove water. Okay, next on the agenda is accomplishments and action plans. Anybody have any suggestions? Do you want to go through all the accomplishments of last year and then we'll put on action plans for next week? Or take finance department and do accomplishments and look at action plans. What do you guys? I don't know if there's a right or a wrong. Nobody wrote. All right. Did anyone?
I wrote one.
You guys?
All right. Okay, you lead the way.
Yeah. And then, well, we just make a point to bring them next meeting so that we can go through them, because I don't think there's any good if you don't have them. It's not good. So, all right, so we'll pass that. New business? Okay. Staff reports, any questions for staff? A young man that got injured, apparently. Still critical, so.
Does anyone know what the family needs?
Yeah. Melissa and I have been working on it the last few days.
When it comes to the trustee reports.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think we'll get the eighth grade question. We get well or something too. But any questions for staff on rains? Haven't been hitting us too hard. Actually, it's been dry since the last meeting. Esker Drive, is that true, Kelly?
No. Waiting for a drought just a little bit more, but we're getting there.
Really?
We're drowning down in Mallard Point.
All right.
Yes. Enough with the rain.
Yeah.
If you want to test boots, just go to Kevin's house. Go down the basement.
A little bit of good news. Delmore is seriously looking at the lot that's south of Dr. Adelwald's on Capitol and Galena.
Behind the Jewel?
Behind the Jewel for urgent care. At probably about 30,000 square feet, maybe a little less. So that's positive, and all of the applications from the Molloy Bowls did go into the state for their approval of the traumatic brain injury assisted living facility that would be on the 18 acres north of the car wash. So, and there has been a contract signed by a major national fast food operator for a lot in the Jewel Center.
Oh, good.
What is it? They remain anonymous?
Yes.
Do you know it's better if not, well, if not better than the rest of us, a contract signed and a facility built sometimes? Or
Two different things.
We're certainly hopeful in working with them, but.
So there's a lease for the property, it just.
Well, there's a contract to purchase, which, you know, through due diligence time, they still haven't held. This is as far as they've ever been, so.
In division, any word on division?
Yeah,
revision and
Yeah, we should. We're getting the final plan has been signed, so we should have that tomorrow or the next day. So.
By Craig or
by Emily. Yeah, we're home. Yeah, we signed. They sent back to Kanaki. So.
All right. Division drive.
Right.
Just and then, you know, Mary brought up that extension of the bike trail, 200 feet. Is that an alternate we can maybe do, or price that out too much? Is there
$10 or $15 a linear foot?
Oh, it is.
If you're gonna put asphalt, like
if you did screening or anything.
Yeah, screening would be something less.
Yeah,
screening.
That limestone, the fine,
zag line.
Yeah.
Kind of packs up real hard once it's been wet and dry,
And you can use that for a base in the future anyway, can't you?
You sure could. Yeah. And then that's typically what Fox Valley Park District was. You know, parks are getting the trail and like that before they could.
That might be nice to have that sometime.
And then, do you have to go out to bid or?
Yes. Yeah. And we're trying to finalize all that. We did get the water permit sent down to Springfield River, so that's about to get those permanent applications all set up. So plans to revise. We got those a couple days ago. So
we can get hopefully get it out to bid right away, and then maybe coincide with getting that water permit back.
Right. So, right. Yeah. So we could probably get the underground done this fall. Well, maybe.
Do you think Esker Drive will be done this year?
Oh, yes. Yeah. As soon as it dries out.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get stoned out in a week or two.
Okay.
Just doesn't seem like it gets much drier, but I do. It must be a clayey silt. But
it is very silt. Yeah. So they've been disking it, and it's getting cold. So they've got about 2/3 of it that's fairly dry. It's just the middle section that's still kind of.
Right.
A lot of water
up there.
Yeah.
I say, I know these guys with the, it's not a nuisance or anything, but you know, I have the rural cross section with the ditch, and there's several inches of standing water. And now it's typically everything's, you know, that ditch line is usually dead and brown, burnt out long before now, and it's still standing water. So there, even though it hasn't rained in a week or how many days or how much, there's a ton of groundwater everywhere still. Usually when that's been bone dry for several weeks, areas down by Kevin's are still wet. I mean, there were so many miles apart.
I don't know if the mosquitoes being as bad as they are this year.
I think you still see standing water in farm fields and areas where you typically don't see it.
Yeah. Several lakes down on Jericho Road, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions from staff? Okay. Trustee reports? Rick?
Not much going on with the Citizens Police Advisory Committee, but Melissa and I have been working kind of off and on since the accident that my boy Uriel was in with issues with that. And we had some neighbors, obviously there's not a lot of information that was being given, but that's being worked on to try and open up for some communication with the family. I'll hopefully let some stuff out that have become a little more common knowledge so we can get more wheels in motion. But I've talked to some of the neighbors, some of them provided meals for the family. The boy does live across the street, 4 hours down from me, so it's kind of easy on that aspect. His grandmother and younger sibling, I believe, has gone to Aurora to live with other family temporarily. His 18-year-old brother's kind of been coming to go from the house, but the parents have been living up at the hospital for the most part. The brother's taking a couple meals up with them there. There is somewhat of a language barrier with, I believe, the mother. The dad speaks English fairly well, but Melissa, I'll let you her talk a little bit more working with the schools and another assistance with bilingual translation for stuff to kind of give us more input on what we can do. We've got some bank stuff going. And
Melissa, you just
going. Sure. His grandmother is staying in Aurora at another relative's house.
the younger siblings are rotating between the house in Aurora and staying with mom and dad up at the hospital. And that's, I think that's mom needing your babies, because there's two littler ones that I know of. I don't think mom's even come home yet. I don't think she has. And I think dad's come home once. Other than that, they're up at Lutheran General all the time. His name is Uriel. He's 13 years old. He's going into eighth grade at Camlin Harbor Middle School. They've lived in Mallard Point for some time, because actually my 13-year-old had him in class years ago at down at McDowell. So he knows who I am, and I know who he is, and I guess that's probably why I've gotten involved in this. A little bit of what's all happened, and Brad probably knows all this. All he did was, he has done what all of us sitting in this room have done when we were a teenager. He got on his bike and ran up to the gas station to get a Gatorade and some chips. Personally, I would have ran to the gas station to get candy and pop. But yeah. That's all he did. Came down Main Street and attempted to cross Route 47, was hit by one van. That van ultimately put him under a semi-truck, and that's where it is today. It doesn't really sound like it might have just been a bad judgment call on a 13-year-old, which they do that at that age. He is alive. He has not passed away. The rumor mill has it that he has passed away. He has not passed away. He is alive. He is improving slightly every day. He is not out of the forest by any means. He has injuries from his head down to his toes.
I don't know how much we should say on that.
Exactly.
You know, protected under HIPAA until
definitely
the parents release stuff. So.
Definitely. So, but he is alive, and that's where we're taking it from here, and he is progressing a little bit better every day. He's up at Lutheran General, so he went from the hospital down here, and they helicoptered him into Lutheran General. Mm-hmm. He's in pediatric ICU up there, and currently he's in an induced coma.
So, have you set up a...
I did that today. There's an account that was set up today with Castle Bank. I've been working with the social worker up at Lutheran General, who has been beyond wonderful. And the account is not, it should be set up by now. It is under his name, but I'm going to talk to Dad first to make sure we have his name before we can launch that out.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to donate anything, money can go right over to Castle Bank, and they'll put it into the account. Both of his parents work for the West Aurora School District, so they are also very interested in this whole process, along with Camlin School District as well. Camlin's going to be launching it in their KCN probably tomorrow. With the language barrier that's existing, I've leaned on a friend of mine who's bilingual, and she has been in contact with Dad. Dad is very flattered that we are all rallying around them from afar at this point. They are staying up there all the time right now. I did find out today that I think, I have to try to figure it out tomorrow, that it sounded to me with the younger siblings there, and they can't have younger siblings in an ICU unit, that there's been a couple nights these people have slept in their car. And that is not
I know Lutheran General has an apartment up there for parents, so. But
I'm gonna try to find out if we can get that taken care of. So at this point, I just actually talked to Ken to see if he will help me to bring this into the virtual world, so everyone can all be on the same page, and let Sugar Grove do what we do best, and that is we take care of each other. So.
Thank you. Keep us posted. Rick, did you have anything else?
No, I don't.
Tom?
Nothing to report.
Marie?
Attended the chamber lunch last week and had a very nice presentation by a woman from the state treasurer's office about help that's available for funds for various businesses. So I'll bring you the folder because I think it would be good information for you. I just left it on the counter today. Also, the chamber is planning a fundraiser for Saturday, October 16th. It's a mystery dinner. It will be held at the library, and it's $50 a person, and tickets are limited to 250 people. So they're doing this as a fundraiser, so if you have the date available, it sounds like it could be a good time. Also,
that's actually a murder mystery.
Yeah, murder mystery.
No problem. Also, there will be an after hours in September, and I missed the date. I think it's the 22nd. Could be wrong. So just watch for some information about that. It's going to be at the Prairie Building. Also, the farmers market continues every Saturday until the end of September. This past weekend was the Dog Days weekend. We had a real nice turnout, so lots of people with their dogs. That's it.
Okay.
Nothing.
Kevin? I guess all I would say is 2010, Cornwell is continuing to wrap up their finances. Definitely a struggle this year. But believe it or not, planning for the 2011, Cornwell has begun. So stay tuned.
Wow.
All right. So I thank you to everybody that either came to Cornwell or participated. It really is a community event.
It's Elburn Days this weekend, so you can go up there and appreciate what you go through. And go through somebody else's stuff there, right?
Yeah, go and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So we're calling for rain Friday. Hopefully the rain blows over for them.
Didn't they have a washout last year on Friday?
They did.
Kevin's probably signed up for the mud bottle.
Yeah. Tell you what, in talking to a number of events, other community event planners, every community this year has had at least one day rained out. For their community event, so we're not the only one.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think it's about time to change the weather over
there. Yeah, one thing you can do is go ahead and be able to water the mud up here. Anything else, Kyle?
No, that's it.
Melissa, anything else?
No, school starts next week.
Yeah, that's important.
Watch Wednesday.
Is it a full day on Wednesday?
Yes, it is. Right out of the gate.
So
I'm not very happy about that. Just everybody just drive a little slower that day.
I know, the older kids, they're getting on a bus around 10 to 7 for us. And the grade schoolers get on a bus about 8:15 at our bus stop. So those are sort of the time frames that we ran all the place. But
yeah,
great having
like
the police cars follow around. Are you planning on anything going to the grade school?
Oh, or maybe there was there.
Maybe the traffic sign out there. It's working now.
Yeah.
Again. We get out by the schools or something. Soon.
Yeah, we're gonna put around. Olasi kind of wanted it up on 47 there for when they get started. So we'll share it a little bit and try to get it around. Got the hot spots.
Also, Brad. The player buses are not happening this year through the school, so I don't really know how that's going to work. However, I can see parents going and picking up collage kids and dropping them off at one central location for them to walk. I'm just making speculations that we may have some more kids walking around after school just to let the officers know that there's a good probability they're going from point A to point B.
Yep.
And that'll happen for what time? Around 4:30 and
5:30.
5:30. Because there was a 2.
When it used to get into town was around 5:30.
Yeah. So between, because I know there was 2 of them, and the event's still ending at the time that it ended last year, and some of them end at different times. So there's like 2 different big groups of kids that are coming out of school just to let you guys know. So they just see kids walking in places they wouldn't normally see. And that's probably.
And then President's Report, I've been talking to Dean Holland, who's the village president of Big Rock, and he would like to sit down sometime in September and talk about boundary agreement, or lack thereof, but at least talk about them, so a little bit. So, anyways, I'm building a house for him, so it makes it convenient. I'm sort of at his mercy and sort of at my mercy. So anyways, we've
Yeah, it's been very important with the conversations. Actually, we haven't even talked about village issues. He's understanding what a building department has to go through nowadays, and he didn't see it from that perspective, so it's been helpful. So I think we can have some good positive discussions, and we'll sit down once school gets back. That's all I have. Any public comment? Hearing none, close that. Church's not here.
Thanks for being here, Ken.
Yeah. Dave, can I get a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss personnel, not take action, and to adjourn there from the
second.
First and second, roll call, please.
Trustee Gary.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee Riggs.
Aye.
Trustee Salto.
Aye.